Aladdin heard very calmly all that his mother could say to dissuade him from his design, and after he had weighed her representations, replied, "I own, mother, it is great rashness in me to presume to carry my pretensions so far, and a great want of consideration to ask you to go and make the proposal to the Sultan without first taking proper measures to procure a favourable reception, and I therefore beg your pardon. But be not surprised that I did not at first see every measure necessary to procure me the happiness I seek. I love the princess, and shall always persevere in my design of marrying her. I am obliged to you for the hint you had given me, and look upon it as the first step I ought to take to procure the happy issue I promise myself. You say it is not customary to go to the Sultan without a present, and that I have nothing worthy of his acceptance. Do not you think, mother, that what I brought home with me the day on which I was delivered from death may be an acceptable present? I mean, those things that you and I both took for coloured glass. But now I can tell you that they are jewels of inestimable value. I know the worth of them by frequenting the shops, and you may take my word that all the precious stones which I saw in the jewellers' shops were not to be compared to those we have, either for size or beauty. I am persuaded that they will be received very favourably by the Sultan. You have a large porcelain dish fit to hold them. Fetch it, and let us see how they will look when we have arranged them according to their different colours." Aladdin's mother brought the china dish when he took the jewels out of the two purses in which he had kept them, and placed them in order according to his fancy. But the brightness and lustre they emitted in the daytime so dazzled the eyes both of mother and son that they were astonished beyond measure, for they had only seen them by the light of a lamp, and though the latter had beheld them pendant on the trees like fruit beautiful to the eye, yet, as he was then but a boy, he looked on them only as glittering playthings. After they had admired the beauty of the jewels some time, Aladdin said to his mother, "Now you cannot excuse yourself from going to the Sultan, under pretext of not having a present to make him, since here is one which will gain you a favourable reception." Though the good widow did not believe the precious stones so valuable as her son estimated them, she thought such a present might nevertheless be agreeable to the Sultan, but she still hesitated. "My son," said she, "I cannot conceive that the Sultan will look upon me with a favourable eye. I am sure that if I attempt to deliver your strange message, I shall have no power to open my mouth. Therefore I shall not only lose my labour, but the present, which you say is so valuable, and shall return home again in confusion, to tell you that your hopes are frustrated. But," added she, "I will do my best to please you, though certainly the Sultan will either laugh at me, or be in so great a rage as to make us both the victims of his fury." She used many other arguments to endeavour to make Aladdin change his mind. But he persisted in importuning his mother to execute his resolution, and she, out of tenderness, complied with his request. As it was now late, and the time for admission to the palace was past, the visit was put off till the next day. The mother and son talked of different matters the remaining hours, and Aladdin strove to encourage her in the task she had undertaken. While she could not persuade herself she should succeed, and it must be confessed she had reason enough to doubt. "Child," said she to Aladdin, "if the Sultan should hear my proposal with calmness, and after this should think of asking me where lie your riches and your estate, what answer would you have me return him?" "Let us not be uneasy, mother," replied Aladdin, "about what may never happen. First, let us see how the Sultan receives and what answer he gives you. If he desires to be informed of what you mention, I am confident that the lamp will not fail me in time of need." The tailor's widow reflected that the lamp might be capable of doing greater wonders than just providing victuals for them, and this removed all the difficulties which might have prevented her from undertaking the service she had promised. Aladdin, who penetrated into his mother's thoughts, said to her, "Above all things, mother, be sure to keep secret our possession of the lamp, for thereon depends the success we have to expect." And after this caution, they parted to go to rest. Aladdin rose before daybreak, awakened his mother, pressing her to get herself dressed to go to the Sultan's palace, and to get admittance, if possible, before the great officers of state went in to take their seats in the divan, where the Sultan always assisted in person. Aladdin's mother took the china dish, in which they had put the jewels the day before, wrapped in two napkins, one finer than the other, which was tied at the four corners for more easy carriage, and set out for the palace. When she came to the gates, the Grand Vizier, the other viziers, and most distinguished lords of the court were just gone in. But notwithstanding the great crowd of people who had business there, she got into the divan, a spacious hall, the entrance into which was very magnificent. She placed herself just before the Sultan, Grand Vizier, and the great lords who sat in council on his right and left hand. Several causes were called, according to their order, pleaded and adjudged, until the time the divan generally broke up. When the Sultan, rising, returned to his apartment, attended by the Grand Vizier, the other viziers and ministers of state then retired, and also did all those whose business had called them thither. Some pleased with gaining their causes, others dissatisfied at the sentences pronounced against them, and some in expectation of being heard the next sitting. Aladdin's mother, seeing the Sultan retire and all the people depart, judged rightly that he would not sit again that day, and resolved to go home. When Aladdin saw her return with the present, he knew not what to think, and in fear lest she should bring him some ill news, had not courage to ask her any questions. But she, who had never set foot into the Sultan's palace before, and knew not what was every day practised there, freed him from his embarrassment, and said to him, "Son, I have seen the Sultan, and am very well persuaded he had seen me too, for I placed myself just before him. But he was so much taken up with those who attended on all sides of him, that I pitied him, and wondered at his patience. At last I believe he was heartily tired, for he rose up suddenly, and would not hear a great many who were ready prepared to speak to him, but went away, at which I was well pleased, for indeed I began to lose all patience, and was extremely fatigued with staying so long. But there is no harm done, I will go again tomorrow. Perhaps the Sultan may not be so busy." Though his passion was very violent, Aladdin was forced to be satisfied, and to fortify himself with patience. He had at least the satisfaction to find that his mother had got over the greatest difficulty, which was to procure access to the Sultan, and hoped that the example of those she saw speak to him would embolden her to acquit herself better of her commission, when a favourable opportunity might offer. The next morning she repaired to the Sultan's palace with the present, as early as the day before, but when she came there, she found the gates of the divan shut, and understood that the council sat but every other day, therefore she must come again the next. This news she carried to her son, whose only relief was to guard himself with patience. She went 6 times afterward on the days appointed, and placed herself always directly before the Sultan, but with as little success as the first morning, and might have perhaps come 1,000 times to as little purpose, if luckily the Sultan himself had not taken particular notice of her.